wonder at times why this is so. And my only answer that can come to me is that because in common, you and I have been privileged to see in part, at least, that vision of which Rondell and Irene sang just a moment ago. We have heard the still small voice of the Spirit of God, and it has caused us to feel a brotherhood and a common oneness with one another in the Lord's work. You know, it does me good sometimes to realize just how much all men and women are alike, regardless of what day and age they lived, or how young they may be, or how old they may be, how inexperienced or how much experience they might have gained in life, how much we're all alike. For every one of us sitting here in this room or standing here today share some of the very same things. We have the same desires. We all desire the same things. We desire to have, and we search for, and we look after, and we search out for happiness and for goodness within our life, and for joy, and for new experiences. And we desire to have a feeling of self-value and esteem. We desire to be considered well by others. We all have, likewise, some of the same needs. We all experience some of the same doubts and some of the same fears, just like the Apostle Paul here. He had difficulty in believing in this man, Jesus Christ. He had a problem. He had difficulty in believing that this one who had lived there in his land, in his day and age, could be the Son of God. And that he was resurrected from the dead and now lived and could touch his life. He was skeptical of these things, and he doubted them. It reminds me of a discussion I heard some 9 or 10 years ago. I hope I don't get in trouble for mentioning it. We used to live next to a good Baptist family. And every Sunday they went to church and Sunday school, as did we. And then for the rest of the week, we heard wonderful theological discussions between our three-year-old and theirs about all various sorts of subjects. And I well remember standing in the kitchen with the window open and hearing a great theological discussion about the devil between these 2 3-year-olds. And one of them was professing to know that there was such an old being as the devil who lived and existed, and he lived down there beneath the earth. And the other one thought about that for a little bit. And then she said, no. You know, I dug a hole out in the ground out in the backyard there, and I didn't see him in there. And there at the tender age of 3, you see, my daughter was skeptical already of some of these things that we commonly hear and express and say. Why is it? Because the simple reason is that you and I have been given a mortal body. We've been given a physical body made of the elements of this earth. And the largest share of our experience comes to us through our senses, through the sense of touch and sound and sight and feel. And this is how we learn. This is how we get our impressions. I was talking to Andy the other day, and he was telling me about a relative of his who was born deaf and dumb. But then later on, in the same little story, down there into the basement is an electrical repulsion between the molecules in my body and the molecules in the floor there. A hard saying, a hard thing to believe and comprehend, because it defies your experience. It defies the senses that you have. But you know, in spite of all his doubts, and in spite of all his skepticism, the Lord did reveal himself to the Apostle Paul. And we can read right in here why he did it. Boys and girls, listen, because I'm talking to you as well. But the Lord said unto Ananias about Paul, "Go thy way, for he is a chosen vessel unto me to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and the children of Israel." You see, the Apostle Paul, even while breathing out threats and destruction to the saints and to the Christians, was of value and was of use to the Lord. His life was to be of greater value than we can even imagine in our slightest imaginations. And so the Lord caused him, an unbeliever, a doubter, a skeptic, to have a personal experience with Jesus Christ. After having that experience, never to be the same man again. To have his life changed forever because of that experience. There's an unusual statement over in the second chapter of Acts. We read it, and it used to cause me a great deal of wonderment as I read it. There it says, "And the Lord added daily to the church those that should be saved." The Lord added to the church those that should be saved. Those in whom he saw some useful value and some purpose. Now you know, then I maintain that sometime in your life, maybe it was a year ago, maybe it was when you were but 8 or 9, or maybe you were 15 or 16, or maybe you were 60, but sometime in your life, the still small voice of inspiration has whispered to you and instructed you in some small way that you should take a step that would bring you closer to the Lord and to the work of the Lord, and to make of your life something of use and of value. And the Lord has seen then, I maintain, in your life, just as he did in the Apostle Paul, something of worth and something of value, perhaps more than you have ever been able to imagine. We live in marvelous times. I say they're fearful times because the changes that are taking place in the world today, you boys and girls read about them, you study them, you see them happening about you, as do we all. They are momentous. They are great changes. They are changes that we can hardly fathom. Just imagine the changes that have transpired in the life of this one gentleman here. It's unimaginable, it's unbelievable to try to comprehend the social, the economic, the political, the spiritual changes that have taken place in one man's lifetime. But we maintain that in your lifetimes, there are going to be even more, and even more drastic and pronounced changes than those that have taken place in the last 90 years. Because there is a great work that faces the church and the people of the world. There are millions of people today that live in despair. There are millions of people that live in poverty and in misery and in doubt and in ignorance. These people are going to be given light. They're going to have an opportunity to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. They're going to be carried a message of hope and a message of courage and a message of salvation to those who have been without it. The people of our own country, the Indian people, who have been so backward and have been so far out of our thinking and out of the progress that we as a nation have made, these people are going to take their rightful place. They're going to hear the gospel, they're going to be converted to the gospel, and they're going to be recalled to the fact that this land everything to him. You're worth more than you can possibly imagine. You know, I read in the newspaper about a year ago, I guess, about a man who ran a service station. Somebody drove into that service station and said, "Give me 5 gallons of gasoline," and he paid him $1.50 or whatever it was. And in a little bit of money that he gave him was a little old dull penny. It was just a penny to that man who gave it in return for a little bit of gasoline. But that penny was worth $3,000. And that's just exactly like your lives. To you, it's just a life now, perhaps. But it's worth as much in comparison as $3,000 is to a little penny. And you're not going to be just a mechanic. You're called to be a mechanic who does his job so well, and with so much earnestness, and with so much good cheer and nature, and with so much work for the money that he requires, that it's going to make an impression upon every person who comes into the scope of his experience, and will be willing to listen to him, and to accept of his counsel. You're not called to be a scientist. You're called to be an individual who searches through the avenues of science and finds and searches out the truths of eternity, the truths that God has established, that created and made this universe. And with them, you can be of great help and use. A man, a boy, is not called to be a farmer. He's called to be an individual who can learn from the experiences of nature and his dependence upon nature the ways of God Almighty. And in his conversation with his fellows and his neighbors, is able to go out among his own kind of people and bear a kind of testimony that nobody from the city could bear. Only another farmer, only another man from the country. And that's what we're called to do. We're not just a mechanic, we're not just a teacher, we're not just a farmer. We are called to be something extra, something of value and something of worth. And we are to the master. Sometimes we don't recognize it. There are millions of people in this world, millions of Christian people, millions of people that went to church today and will go again tonight, that go home from that church and they live drab, ordinary, little humdrum lives. And from the time they walk out of church, they pick up and they carry the burdens of the world on their back. And they have no testimony for the master. They're just pennies in the exchange of the world and the ideas. There are other people of value, people of importance, people of prestige, people in high positions, whose lives become so unbearable to them that they willingly commit suicide and get rid of this life. They can stand no longer. We're called to something far above and far better than that. We're called to have a life that is beautiful, a life that is happy, a life that is abundant, a life that is rich in the good things of the mind and the soul, and the physical world in which we live. The Lord's concerned about us. He's concerned about you boys and girls, no matter how old or young you might be. He's concerned about the companions that you keep. He's concerned about the people you will marry as you grow older. He's concerned about the occupations you're going to choose. He's concerned about the studies you're going to have as you go on through school, and what you study. ye love me, keep my commandments, and I will pray the Father, and he will give you another comforter, that he may abide with you forever, even the Spirit of truth. For he dwelleth with you, and shall be in you. That's the only way. That's the only way that you and I, or anyone else in this congregation or out in that big world, can have a personal experience with God. Unless he does something so unusual and dramatic as he did here with the Apostle Paul to accomplish his ends. And that is that we must love him. We must love him and take upon us his yoke and be willing and endeavor to serve him and follow after him. And I want you to remember that Christ left his church here upon the face of the earth to represent him. And then it seems to me that what we're saying is that to realize the fullest potential of life, we must have a personal experience with God in Jesus Christ. And to have that personal experience, we must love Jesus Christ and God and the church which represents him here on the face of this earth. And so then I am posed with another question. How then can I grow in my love for Jesus Christ if it has been insufficient? I want to know how to love him more. Because if I learn how to love him more and express that love to a greater degree, then this promise will be fulfilled in my life to a greater degree. And I can only offer this parallel. I would ask the parents here, how do you grow in your love for your children? Why do you love your children? And you know the answer is not as obvious as it seems. We love our children because when they were young and dependent upon us, we served them. And because they did depend upon us for their very existence and their life, and we realized it. Because we got up with them when they cried in the middle of the night. And because we prayed for them when they were sick, and we worried for them when they got a little older, and they went about their ways, and they did things we didn't like. And we were concerned about them, and we served them, and day by day and year by year, we learned to love them more. And there are people in this audience who can testify that the greater that service has to be, the greater that love shall be. And we know it to be a fact. We know it to be a fact. And then this occurs to me, and I see this parallel. How then shall I love Jesus Christ the more? How then shall I love his church? The same way I learned to love Jesus Christ by being concerned about his work. I learned to love him by serving him. I learned to love and respect this church by being involved in it. And if I want to learn to love it more, then I get more involved in it. I serve it more diligently. I give more of myself. And this is what has been asked of us, that we give our attendance to this church and that we support our local and our church wherever we can. It's been asked of us that we pay our tithing to the church and that we give of our abundance that it might grow. And by doing this, we become more involved and we learn to love it more, and the Lord will reveal himself more fully and completely to us. And you boys and girls that are just now beginning to make yourselves a little money, this is the time to start. When you make $5 a week, it's going to be easier to pay your tithing than you make when you make $500 a week. And if you don't believe it, you just ask some of your elders that have been faced with the problem. It's a difficult situation. Far too often, as we look about us, we see that we neglect to do some of the things that have been asked of us, and they have been asked in wisdom, God's wisdom, knowing that they will help us get where we want to go. I let me make another parallel here. How do you win a friend? If you go to school and there is a 13 and 14 years old, old enough to know better, who try to buy the friendship of the people around them by kind words, maybe, or by flattery, or by bringing them a little money and getting them a popsicle at the school stand or something. They try to buy the friendship of those about them, and it never works. It never works. It's as futile as anything. If you want to make a friend of an individual, you ask that person to do something for you. You ask that person to help you in some way. You let that individual know that you're a little bit dependent upon him or her, because we all are. And when that person complies, they're tied to you forever. They're tied to you forever. You don't make friends by going out and doing nice things for people. Psychologically, it's sound to say you make friends by asking these people to help and assist and do things for you. And the Lord Jesus Christ wants to have us for a friend. And he has asked us to do certain things for him, to testify of him, to support his church, to attend it, to make prayerful decisions in life. And by doing this, he knows that we will in turn draw closer to him, that we will grow in our love for him, and we will have his promises manifested more in our lives, and our richness of our lives will increase. I'd like to call your attention to the beautiful little bouquet I have down here on the table. If you hadn't noticed it, it isn't very decisions, don't you, David? You don't want dad and mom doing it all for you. And I appreciate that fact. And I'm proud of it. And the day will come when you'll be a better man and a better woman and girl because you have done it. And you've learned to become independent and to think and reason for yourselves. That's a part of life and of maturation and growing up. But I also think that every one of you folks back there, regardless of your age, are intelligent enough. You're intelligent enough to realize that you still need help from time to time. You still need counsel. You still need, relax now. You still need advice. And you still know that you, there are things that you can't provide for yourself. You're intelligent enough to realize that. If you won't take offense now, boys and girls, the other night when I just paused casually up at your place where you were playing volleyball, in just a few moments, and it became obvious to me, you even need to be taught how to play. I hope you don't take this badly, but you don't play well. You don't play volleyball well at all. And I know that you realize, you big fellas that were jumping all over those little kids, you realize that you'd have had a lot more fun in that volleyball game if you played the rules. If you'd have practiced and if you'd have followed the procedure of setting up to the people on the front row and letting everybody play and the little kids weren't fearful that somebody's going to step in the middle of them any second, you'd have all had more fun. And you realize that. Sometimes you ignore it, and sometimes you overlook it, but I know you're smart enough to realize you still need a lot of advice and help and counsel. And to whom shall we go when we seek counsel? Where shall we look? In whom shall we place our trust? Shall we go to the mechanic down here on the corner when we have a big life decision to make and ask his counsel? Well, if the life decision was about the carburetor of my automobile, maybe I should. But if it was about the moral upbringing of my children or my own moral life, maybe not. Maybe not. If I break my arm, I'll go to the doctor for advice and counsel and help. But the doctor may not be able to provide me the slightest bit of help in making the big decisions and choices in life. Among doctors is the highest rate of suicide in the nation. Well, now, I don't need that kind of to help me make the decisions of life or my family. I need their kind of thinking to set my broken bones and to heal my ailments sometimes. We might go to a teacher. We can get a lot of help and a lot of counsel there. They can teach us about history and they can help us learn to type and they can teach us about science and auto mechanics and mathematics and they can help us meet life a little better. But that doesn't mean that they're the individual who shall determine the way we walk down life's highway. I have a friend who is an excellent math teacher. He's a wonderful math teacher, and if I had a problem in statistics or math, he'd be the first one I'd go to. But you know, his fingernails are bitten right down to the quick. And he's got ulcers, and he can't come talk to a group of adults without having three or four beers beforehand. Now, that's not the kind of thinking I need to resolve my spiritual problems or my mental decisions or my social well-being. You boys and girls might very much enjoy to have a whole pile of records by the Beach Boys and Sonny and Cher and any number of people, and you might enjoy the sound of the music and the beat, which is fine. And I have a pile of records in my house that I enjoy too. But we don't go to Sonny and Cher for advice about how to live. We can buy their record, but until we know that they see that the highest rate of suicide is in the world is here in our nation, and alcoholism is on the rise, and there's experimentation with marijuana and LSD and all kinds of social rebellion by people who have not encountered or applied the pure principles of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I read an article here in your Grand Junction paper. The article came from Denver, I think it was, where the head of your health department, an esteemed doctor, wrote about LSD and marijuana. So, oh, don't worry about it. It's not as bad as it seems. It's just a little experimentation by our younger set, and it doesn't lead to any drastic consequences. Baloney. That man is blind. Not only is he blind to the precepts of the gospel, he's blind to the facts of life. He has not read, or he's chosen to ignore the facts that have been done by research throughout this medical centers of this country that tell us that LSD being used by 1 out of 4 high school students in California. Maybe the ratio's less in other places. I sure hope it is. LSD and marijuana, though they're not habit forming, that they perform permanent damage in the lives and in the chromosomes and in future unborn generations of young people who are using those things in a little mild form of social experimentation. That's not the kind of advice we need. Those are not the kind of leaders that we need. They're blinded for some reason. I don't know what. Why? Why do we have such a high rate of suicide among our college students and our high school students, I wonder? To me, it seems that there's only one reason, that there's conflict within the individual. And where does the conflict come from? It comes from the fact that in every one of us, God has instilled a conscience. And to those of us, and there are multitudes of others, who have been giving a little bit of an inkling as to the ways of life, the words of life, that conscience has been honed and sharpened so that when we ignore these things and we go out in the world and we get a little independent and we leave the nest and we begin to go against the things that have been placed within our lives and our consciousness, there arises conflict. And that conflict leads to disaster. If you could, on the other hand, if you could ask any however young or however old that individual might be, you could ask our brother here, having lived a life in the gospel of Jesus Christ, what would you have differently in your life? There's only one thing different he'd have, and that's just to have that strength and power to have lived a little more closely to the gospel. Not to leave it, not to ignore it, but just to have lived a little more closely, because life's experiences have taught him that by living and by exercising these gospel principles, there comes to men and women and boys and girls and our old ones as well, personal experiences with God. When you make your choices in life, and when you choose as you have chosen, and I see in our young people, in many of our young people, a predisposition to righteousness, and it makes my heart rejoice when you see this in certain individuals, and when you've made that choice, make it permanent. With no reservations, you're going to perform this experiment, and you're going to find the pure value that it offers. Sure, there are going to be troubles, and there are going to be trials, there are going to be doubts and despair from time to time. But you know, I think I've learned a lesson, and I see that other people haven't, and it makes me sad. Never refight the same battle you've won. When you've made your decision, and you've had a personal experience with God, however slight or however great, never refight those battles and those doubts again. What a beautiful testimony our sister gave us the other morning when she said at the age of 13 there came to her a revelation because of her doubts and her inquiry that God is kind and just and merciful. Never to be entertained that doubt again. Now upon this revelation we'll will build our life, and year by year we'll progress and we'll have further revelation of His kindness and goodness and mercy. If you'll pardon a personal